Okay, so I'm very happy to introduce our speaker for tonight. Mark Shulman has spent his career as a computer instructor, software designer, and small business owner. He's taught a wide range of programming courses for major corporations, worked on large software development projects. He's currently the IT manager for a group of family practice physicians. His major geek interest these days is computer technology that brought about the moon landings in the 1960s. He lives near Orlando, Florida, and tonight he is going to fill us in on encryption software. And before I forget, I already did forget, I'm going to mute all, and you will not have the ability to unmute yourself. So feel free to put comments into the chat. If I do see something that I think is important to be brought up right away, I will relay the message through and get it answered right away. Otherwise, we'll hold questions until the end. And so with that, Mark, I would like to turn it over to you to take us through tonight's presentation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. All right, let's see if I can manage to share my screen. All right. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep. Okay. And we're seeing the your slide as well. There we go.
Okay, fantastic. All right. So tonight we're going to talk about encryption, and this is one of my favorite topics to talk about, and I hope you'll get something really interesting out of this that you can use. Chris talked a little bit about my background, and you've heard enough about me, but the one thing I wanted to add, and by the way, to tie in with the previous discussion, my career goes back to when I used punch cards and 9-track tapes, so I've been doing this a long time. And I do want to make clear that we're going to talk about a lot of different software products in this presentation, and I don't have affiliations with any of them. These are just things that I've discovered along my technological journey and things that I use and that I like, and everything we're going to talk about tonight is free, so I have no affiliation with any of these companies. So the topic tonight is encryption, and what is encryption? Well, it's scrambling information so that it can't be read by unauthorized people. You might want to take information and just scramble it so that nobody else can ever see it, and you can get to it when you want to, but nobody else can ever see it. You also might want to scramble it so you can send it to another person so that you can see it and they can see it, but nobody else can. But the idea is you've got information that's private or secret, and you don't want it getting out into the general world. Could be financial information, could be all kinds of things, and you want to be able to keep it secret. And we're going to talk about lots of different ways that you can do that, lots of reasons why you might want to do that. So you already use encryption every day, and we'll talk about two uses that you use, whether you realize it or not. One of them is Wi-Fi. So when you bring up the list of hotspots on your tablet or computer or phone, and it's got a little padlock next to it, that indicates a Wi-Fi hotspot that's encrypted, and you have to know a Wi-Fi key in order to be able to connect to that Wi-Fi hotspot. And the idea is that any data that you send between your computer and phone and the Wi-Fi hotspot is going to be encrypted, scrambled, so that if any bad guys are trying to intercept what you're doing, they won't be able to see what you're doing. And the other place that we commonly use this every day is in the browser. Anytime you see that little padlock, and anytime the address starts with HTTPS, then everything between your browser and the web server on the other end of your web connection is being encrypted. And so as it travels through the internet, the data is unreadable, and the only entities that can read your data are your web browser and the web server on the other end, whether it's Amazon or your local library or whoever it is. So some examples why you might want to do this. You don't want your roommate or your spouse or whoever snooping through your PC when you're not home. So you've got some information, could be financial information. This tends to apply more to youngsters, but there might be kids in the home, and you just don't want them to be able to get on your PC and look at your stuff. So that's a good use for encryption. You might have a flash drive on which you want to keep passwords for your social media accounts, let's say, and you want to keep that flash drive with you at all times, but you're worried that if you're very absent-minded like I am and you leave that flash drive someplace, if somebody finds it, they won't just be able to look on the flash drive and be able to get at your passwords. So it's going to be scrambled in some way. Maybe you want to email your personal information to your tax accountant, and you're worried about emailing sensitive information, and so you want to make sure that it's encrypted so that you can see it and your tax accountant can see it, but nobody else can. And by the way, it's worth talking about how secure email is. So if you send information in email through your email program, and, well, I'll talk more about that in just a second. How secure is that information that you're sending over email? And the answer is not at all. Email was developed at a time when everybody trusted everybody. It started out being used amongst universities where everybody pretty much trusted everybody else. And built into the original email scheme, there is just no protection against snooping. And your email goes all over the place when you send it. It goes from one server to another, and you never know where it's going. And there could be people all along the way who are snooping on it. So you should assume that every email you send, it's as if it were published in the local newspaper, unless you use encryption. And that's what we're going to talk about. So in this presentation, we're going to talk about these topics, and if these don't make sense to you yet, they will. We're going to talk about single file encryption, encrypted containers, whole disk encryption, phone encryption, and a little bit of other stuff. So, got a lot to cover. So, the first thing we're going to talk about is single file encryption. So, what is this? We want to encrypt a single file. So there might be lots of reasons why we want to do this. Maybe I want to email a file to my accountant, and I want to make sure that nobody can read that email except me and my accountant. Or I want to store a list of my medications on my flash drive, and I don't want to have to worry about losing the flash drive and having somebody see that list of medications. So maybe I've got a Word document that's got my medications in it, and I want to encrypt that list so that in order to be able to get at that list of medications, I have to know a password is generally what it is. So these are all good uses for single file encryption. So remember, we're going to take one single file and we're going to scramble it so that only we or only someone that we want to see it can actually see it. So there's lots of different ways you could do this. One way is Microsoft Office has it built in. So if it's a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet and you want to encrypt that so that someone has to supply a password to be able to do that, Microsoft has that built right into Office. So let's take a look at how you do that. So I've got some files here. Let me neaten this up a little bit. Okay, so I've got a folder here called Mark, and that's where all my files are. And I've got a folder in there called Business. And if I go into that folder, I've got some files there. And one of the files is my business plan. And let's say I want to send that business plan to somebody that I want to go into business with me. And since I haven't opened the business yet, I don't want this to get out, so I'm going to send it via email, but I'm really nervous that somebody might see it. So I want to use encryption to make sure that nobody can. So I will click on that file and open it up in Word. Okay, and you can just see it's a regular Word document, but I want to encrypt it. So what I'm going to do, and that slide had the directions for this on it, and I'm going to make sure that Chris has a copy of these slides when I'm done here, and he'll be able to distribute it so you don't have to worry about taking notes. So I'm going to go to File and Info and Protect Document and Encrypt with Password. It's a couple of clicks, but we can get there. And it prompts me for a password. So I'm going to type in a password. And it prompts me for it again, just to make sure that I typed it correctly twice. And now you can see I've got a yellow background on this item, and it says a password is required to open this document. So I'm going to go back to the document. Nothing much has changed, and I can make whatever changes I want to it. So it's now December 2024, and I'm going to save it. Okay, so nothing appears to have changed. It's still there, and I can email it to somebody, and if they try to open it, it prompts them for a password. And they won't be able to view it. They won't be able to do anything with that document unless they know the password. And if I enter the password, it comes right up. I can make changes to it. I can read it. I can save it. I can do anything I normally could do with it, but I have to enter a password before I can do anything with it. The same thing works for an Excel spreadsheet. So here I've got weekly rolling cash flow, and I can open that. Oops, that one's already encrypted. Bad example then. Let me see if I got a different spreadsheet I can use. Not in that folder. Here we go. Okay. So this is my folder where I keep things that I want to read more about, and I have a folder on mountain climbing. I actually have quite a fascination with mountain climbing. I love reading stories about it. I love reading people's memoirs on it. I have absolutely no desire to actually do it, but I love reading about it. So here's a folder that lists all the 8,000 meter peaks. So if I open that, there we go. You can see it's just a spreadsheet. And if I want to encrypt it, I don't know why I'd want to encrypt this spreadsheet, but let's just say I did. File, info, protect workbook, encrypt with password. And again, it prompts me for a password. And again, okay, and same deal. Nothing appears to have changed, but if I save it, and then somebody tries to open it, it's going to prompt them for a password. And if they don't know the password, they won't be able to get into it. So this would be great for a spreadsheet that's got your financial information in it, your check register, or anything like that. So if it's a Word document, or it's an Excel spreadsheet, or it's a PowerPoint presentation, your encryption is built right in if you want to use it. And again, just so you can see it on that previous slide, there's the steps on what you click on to encrypt a document. Okay, but what if it's not a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet or some other Microsoft Office file, where there are lots of different programs that you can use to encrypt a file? And the one that I like is one called AES Crypt. And AES stands for. I've forgotten what the A stands for. The ES is encryption standard. And it is a very, very widely used method of encryption. And this is free software, which I have installed on this computer. And let me show you how we'd use that. So let's look at the files I've got here. And, well, I'll go back to my business files. No, I won't. I'm going to go back to the mountaineering. Okay, so I've got a PDF here. Take a look at it. And let's say I wanted to encrypt that because it's got some, I'm planning on going on this mountain climb, and I really don't want anybody knowing about it, so I want to encrypt it. How would I use this? Well, I've got AES Crypt installed on this computer, and so to encrypt that file, all I have to do is right-click on it, and right there is an entry for AES Encrypt. And if I click that, it prompts me for a password twice, again, just to make sure I can type it correctly twice in a row. And you can see it created a new file called Everest2023guide.pdf.aes. So that's a copy of the file that's encrypted. Now, I've still got the original file, which anybody could look at, but I have an encrypted copy of the file as well. So I could email that to somebody, and if they don't know the password, they would not be able to get at that file. So let's say I did mail it to somebody, and they downloaded it onto their computer. So I'm going to pretend to be them and just copy it over to my download directory. So there it is right there. If I just try to open it, it prompts me for a password. And I have to know the password. And now again, I have the encrypted file, but I also have the regular file which I can open. So that gives you a way to take any file and be able to encrypt it. Okay, a couple of caveats about using this. Number one, you have to be careful about the file names. Don't give away too much in the file name. So for example, suppose I wanted to look for a new job, and on my work computer, I wanted to keep a to-do list of things I wanted to do to look for a new job. And so it's a Word document, and I encrypted it so that if my boss is snooping through my computer, he can't see that I'm searching what my task list is for looking for a new job. But I have to be careful of the file name. So there's a file called Job Search To-Do List. .doc, he doesn't need to look in that file to figure out that I'm looking for a new job. So maybe a better file name for that file would be something like, new cat rescue task list or something like that, where my boss wouldn't be able to suspect that I'm looking for a new job. So I've seen this so many times where people give the file a really good file name, which completely gives away what the contents of the file is. Caveat number two is don't send the password with the encrypted file. So I've actually seen people do this. So look at this email. So I've encrypted the file and attached it to this email and then said, Dear Pete, the list of phone numbers is attached. The file is encrypted. The password is call me soon! And so if somebody intercepts this email, yes, the file is attached, encrypted, but you've given them the password right there. So the key point with passwords, and there's a whole area of study amongst security experts, is if you're going to send an encrypted file to somebody, send them the password by some other means. So if you're going to email them the file, then maybe text them the password so that you get a lot of extra security that way, so that somebody would have to break into your email and break into your text messages to be able to get everything they need to be able to read that information. The absolute best way to give somebody a password is just to call them up on the phone and read it to them on the phone. That's typically in today's phone system, that's not going to be intercepted. Second best way is by sending them a text. So you need to get the password to them in some other way. Now, if you're encrypting a file just to keep on your computer, then there's no issue here. You don't have to worry about sending the password to anybody. So remember, there's two real reasons that we'd want to encrypt a file, just to keep it safe on our computer and also to email it is the other good use. Sending passwords via email is always a bad idea because email is just too easily intercepted the way the internet works these days. All right, the next topic I'd like to talk about, and this is much more foreign to people, is the concept of encrypted containers. I absolutely love these. I use them all the time, not only in my personal life, but we use them at work too. And I'll give you some information about exactly what we do with them at work. I think it's really fascinating. So what is an encrypted container? So an encrypted container enables you to create a virtual drive on which all of your files are encrypted. So what you essentially do is you set aside an area on your hard disk or on a flash drive or on an external hard drive. You just set aside some file storage someplace, and any files you store in that container are automatically encrypted. So some possible uses for this. You're a financial planner, let's say, and I need to store all of my client files on my PC. But that's really sensitive data, and I want to be sure that nobody could ever steal my PC or my laptop and be able to get to my client's data. So I could create an encrypted container, store all of my client's information in that container, and I could be assured that nobody could ever get to those files without knowing the proper password. Or maybe I have a flash drive and I need to be able to store a large number of sensitive files on that flash drive. I can create an encrypted container on that flash drive, and then I can put all the files I want in that container, and I know that they're encrypted, and if I lose that flash drive, nobody will be able to get to those files. So really, really useful stuff. So the software I'm going to show you, and there's several different pieces of software you can use, but the one I absolutely love is called Veracrypt. And it was developed by a French security company called Idrix, and it's based on a much older piece of software called TrueCrypt, which has been around since about 2000. It's not available anymore, or it's not being supported anymore. Veracrypt is open source software. It's completely free. And it's and always will be free, by the way, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. So let's talk again about what an encrypted container is. So it enables you to create a virtual, this is the slide we just saw. Sorry, duplicate. Okay, so let's talk about how you create an encrypted container on Veracrypt. So a container is just a file. So you create what's typically a very large file, and that's going to be your container. Or you use Veracrypt to create this very large file. You create it wherever you want, on your hard drive, on a flash drive, on an external drive, wherever you want to store encrypted files. It can be as big as you want, other than storage. I mean, if you've got an 8-gigabyte flash drive, then it can't be bigger than 8 gigabytes. So you would have that much storage, however big you make the container, you would have that much storage in which to store encrypted files. Now, it doesn't have to be as big as the entire flash drive or hard drive or external drive. So if I had a 16-gigabyte flash drive, maybe I only need to use 4 gigabytes of it to store encrypted files. So I can create a container that's 4 gigabytes in size. So you can make it as big or as small as you need to be able to hold the files that you want to keep encrypted. And it encrypts it based on a password which you provide. And I'm going to show you how to do all of this in a minute, and it'll make more sense then. So in order to use the container, you have to do something called mounting it. And when you mount it, you have to give it the password. If you don't know the password, you can't do that. Once it's mounted, it looks just like a hard drive on your system. It gets a drive letter, and you can access it via that drive letter. You can copy files to it. You can take files out of it. You can open files within it. You can do all the things you could do with any of the hard drives on your system. And again, you have to know the password to be able to mount the container. When you're done with it, you unmount it or dismount it, and it is then unreadable unless somebody knows the password. So let's summarize this. So the first step is we create the Veracrypt container. That's a one-time thing for any given container. and the container starts out empty and inaccessible. And when I want to use it, I have to mount it. And I have to enter the password. And once I do that, the container can be accessed just like it were a drive on my system. I can copy files into it, take files out of it, whatever I want to do. When I'm done with it, I dismount it, and it goes back to being inaccessible. So let me show you what this looks like. What have I got here? Oh, okay. So to summarize, everything in the container is encrypted. The encryption and decryption happens behind your back. So to encrypt a file, all you have to do is put the file in the container. Another name for this is what they call on-the-fly encryption, and the data is only accessible when the container is mounted. So let me show you what this looks like. So that's a lot of verbiage. Let's see what it actually looks like. So I have a flash drive plugged into my system here. It's my G drive, and it's got lots of space on it. And I think I might need to store, let's say, 300 megabytes of files, and I want to create an encrypted container on this flash drive that I can put files in. So I'm going to use Veracrypt to do that. And this is what Veracrypt looks like. So I'm going to start out by creating what it says volume, container, same thing. So I'm going to say create volume, and it's going to ask me a lot of kind of technical questions, but I can just take the defaults on everything. So I want to create an encrypted file container. I want it to be a standard Veracrypt volume. And it wants to know where I want to put it. What do I want to call the file? So this was my G drive, so I'm going to put it on my G drive, and I'm going to call it my stuff, just like that. So it's going to create a file on my G drive called my stuff. It asks me a whole bunch of technical questions about the encryption. Just click next. It's fine. And then it asks, how big do you want to make it? And I can specify it in kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, or terabytes. I'm going to say I want it to be 300 megabytes. And then it wants the password. I'm going to type in the password that I want to put on it. Got to type it twice. And it warns me, hey, that's kind of a short password. Yes, I know it's a short password. And then it asks me some other questions. Again, just the defaults are fine. And then it wants me to do something interesting. It wants me to jiggle my mouse around until this bar turns green. So I'm just going to jiggle the mouse around, and it's generating random numbers from it. You don't need to worry about any of this. Just do what it says. And there it goes green. And then I can click format, and it goes out and creates the file. And it's done. Now, let's go back and look at my flash drive, and you can see it created a file called My Stuff, and it's 307, roughly 300 megabytes in size. So that's what I asked for. So that's my encrypted container. Now, if somebody looked in that right now, they wouldn't be able to make heads or tails out of it. It's completely unreadable. Nobody could look in there and get any useful information. But I want to put some files in there. So I'm going to select that file. This is how I mount it. I'm going to select that file. I pick a drive. There's all the available drive letters on my system. Let's make it the F drive. You can pick any letter you want. And I'm going to click mount. And it wants the password. And it chugs for a minute. And there we go. Now, if I look over in Explorer, under My Computer, I've got my C drive and my E drive and my G drive like I had before, but I've also now got an F drive. And notice it's 298 megabytes in size. So it's about the 300 megabytes I said I needed. If I can access it just like any drive, it looks like it's empty. But I'm going to go back to my hard drive, And I'm going to take my business files, and I'm going to take all of those files and go over to my F drive and paste them in there. And there they are. So it looks just like any other drive. I can open these files, I can access them, I can edit them, but they actually reside inside that container that we created. So if I go back and look at my G drive, all of those files are actually right inside there. But I access them just as an F drive, and I can do whatever I want to with them. But when I go back into Veracrypt and I dismount that drive, my F drive has disappeared, and the only remnant that's left of all of that is the My Stuff file, and somebody can look in that file all day long, and they will never see any of the information that I've stored in there. When I want to access it again, I just do the same thing. Go back into Veracrypt, select a drive. It's already got the file name plugged in there. Click Mount, put the password in. It chugs for a second. And my F drive is back, and there's all my files. And again, I can access them, I can edit them, I can do anything I want to with them. This is really, really useful. So it enables you to create an area on a flash drive, on your hard disk, whatever, where when the container is not mounted, nobody can get to that information without the password. So what is a practical real-world use for this? Well, let me tell you how we use it at work. So as Chris mentioned, I work in a medical office, and I'm responsible for all the computers in the office, really any kind of equipment I'm responsible for. And every night, we back up patients' medical records, because if you lose somebody's medical records and you're a doctor's office, you are in a world of hurt. The regulations on what happens if you lose people's medical records is really, really severe. So we back up their medical records to an external hard drive, and we've actually got 5 of them, and they're labeled Monday through Friday. And so based on the day of the week, we go to one of those external hard drives, and we back up all of our medical records to that hard drive. And then what also happens is one of the doctors grabs the previous night's hard drive and takes it home with them. And the reason we do that is because if the office building should burn to the ground, we want to make sure that at least one copy of everybody's medical records is not in the building that burns to the ground. So the doctor takes it home with them. And the next morning, he'll bring that one back and take the following night's hard drive home with them. Well, the thing we worry about is, what if their home gets broken into and the hard drive gets stolen? Or what if they get in a car accident and while the ambulance is taking them away, somebody sneaks into the car and grabs the hard drive? We have to make absolutely sure that people's medical records aren't revealed. So what do? We create a Veracrypt container that takes up the entire hard drive, and we put people's medical records in there. So if somebody steals one of these hard drives and they don't know the password that we use to create the Veracrypt container, they absolutely cannot get at any of the information on that hard drive. So there's a good, concrete, practical use of how we use this. Some other good examples is creating a flash drive that you take with you when you travel. So if you're traveling internationally, you might take a flash drive and create a Veracrypt container and put a scanned image of your passport in there, your itinerary, a list of your important passwords, and things like that. And know that if you lose that flash drive, people won't be able to get at really sensitive personal information. And yet, if you need those things while you're traveling, you've got your flash drive with you, and you'll be able to use Veracrypt to get at this information. So one of the nice things about VeraCrypt is that the container you create can have any extension you want. So you can make it look like it's some other kind of file. So here's a listing of a flash drive, and you can see that there is a, what is that, 2 terabytes? That's, yes. Terabytes? Yes, I think it's terabytes. That's a 2 terabyte file with an MPG extension. Now, if somebody looked at that, they'd see MPG, oh, that's a video file. So they think it's a video file. When they double click on it, the media player will say it's not a valid media file and won't be able to play it. But that could actually be a VeraCrypt container. So VeraCrypt will allow you to put any extension you want on a file so that it appears upon casual inspection to be some other kind of file. And that way, if somebody steals this flash drive or finds this flash drive, they won't even suspect that's a VeraCrypt container. So the bad guys can't tell if a particular file is or is not a VeraCrypt container, and they also can't tell when the container was last accessed. So that's kind of interesting. So if we go back and we look at this file on my G drive, so the date on it, or the time on it, is 7:59, which is when I created it. So the really nice thing about this is when you access the files in the container, if I look in the container, the individual files will have the correct time and date that they were last modified. But the container itself keeps the time and date that it was created. So when somebody looks at this flash drive, they're going to say, whatever that is, it hasn't been modified since that time and date. And once it gets to be, 6 months old, they'll think that it's some file that you're not using anymore. So the system does not update these times and dates as you use these files. So that kind of helps throw people off the track if they suspect there might be some interesting information in there. Okay, some other things about this. There's such a thing as a traveler's flash drive, and all that is a flash drive that actually has installed upon it a copy of VeraCrypt. So imagine you did what we discussed earlier, that you want to take your passport, an image of your passport and your itinerary and a list of passwords and stuff like that with you when you travel. Well, if you want to be able to get at it, maybe you're going to need a copy of VeraCrypt to be able to access it. So VeraCrypt can create what's called a traveler flash drive, where it just takes a flash drive and installs the software on it so that you can access it on a computer that doesn't have VeraCrypt installed on it. Key files gives you a capability of a different way to open containers instead of accessing them by typing a password. You have to own a particular kind of file, and I don't want to get into that in any depth, but it's an alternative way to make your files more secure. And there's also something called a hidden container, and hidden containers allow us to go one level deeper in terms of even hiding the fact that we're using VeraCrypt. So if you have a container, someone can't get at the contents without knowing the password, but hidden containers allow you to hide the fact that you're even using VeraCrypt at all. One important thing, and this is true of all the encryption methods that we're talking about, if you lose your password, it's going to be a really bad day. So if you create a VeraCrypt container, it's going to ask you for a password, and if you forget that password, you will never see the data again that's stored in that container. And that's true of all these encryption methods. The next thing I want to talk about is whole drive encryption. What this enables you to do is to encrypt the entire contents of your hard drive. And what this is for, it's typically used on laptops, And it means that without knowing a password, someone can never get at any of the data that's on your laptop's hard drive. And let me tell you a quick story. I was coming home from work one day, and I was going to have dinner with a good friend of mine that I hadn't seen in a while. And for some reason, this person was particularly enamored with Subway and wanted to have dinner there, so I agreed to meet him at Subway, and we did. And it happened to be a hot Florida summer day, and I had my laptop with me, and I didn't want to leave my laptop bag in the car where temperatures can get very, very hot in the summer. So I took my laptop bag and I put it, we ate outside. This is not a picture of the actual place that we ate, but it looked very much like this. And I just put it on the bench next to me. And we had what wound up being about a 2-hour dinner and great conversation. And we were still talking as we got up and left. And I did not realize that I got up and left my laptop bag sitting on the bench. So I went home, and about 2 hours later, after we left, I went looking for my laptop, and that's when it started to dawn on me that I didn't have it, and I must have left it at the restaurant. And it was an outdoor seating just like this in a busy area, and I was absolutely certain that I had lost my, that was the last I was ever going to see of that laptop. And the thing I was a little bit worried about was that day I had been working with some patient information, and I was really afraid that somebody was going to steal that laptop, and we were then going to have to go on the assumption that that patient information had been leaked. So I went tearing back to the Subway, and to my utter amazement, my laptop bag was right where I left it, untouched. So all was well, but it really got me worried about making sure that if I ever lost my laptop again, you know, I'd be sad to lose the money that the laptop represented, but I would be even more sad if it had patient information on it and we had to go through all the regulations that we have to go through if we lose patient data. So, VeraCrypt to the rescue. One of the things VeraCrypt can do is encrypt your entire hard drive. And when you do that, when you start your computer up, you get a screen that looks like this. And it's a little bit different. You get the logo that your laptop normally displays when it boots up, but you notice in the upper left-hand corner, it's prompting me for a password. If you don't know the password, the laptop will not boot. You can't start Windows. You can't look at the files. Even if you pulled the hard drive out of it and tried to analyze what was on the hard drive, you would not be able to get at any information stored on the laptop. How safe is this? Well, it's uncrackable by any known technology. So as long as you use a good password, you can be assured that if somebody finds your laptop, they're not going to be able to get at any of the information on it. Obviously, don't lose your password, and don't pick a password that somebody might guess. So I live in Oviedo, so Oviedo would be a really bad password for me to use because somebody might guess that. And you still have to back up your data just like anything else, because if I lost my laptop, somebody else wouldn't be able to get at the information if they didn't know the password, but my data would be gone with the laptop, so I'd want to make sure that I had copies someplace else. And let me show you how this works. It's really easy. So all you have to do, here's my laptop, and if I run VeraCrypt under Tools, it's under System. The very first item is Encrypt System Partition and Drive. So if I click on that, it's going to prompt me for a password plus some other information, and then it's just going to go through and encrypt the entire hard drive. And you can continue to use the computer while it's working on that. It may take several hours for it to get it completely encrypted, so you need to be at a place where you can let the computer do its work uninterrupted for a few hours. And when it's done, the next time you shut the computer down and restart it, it's going to prompt for the password. So again, don't lose the password, because you will not be able to use the computer without the password. So really easy, really useful. Okay, we talked about that. Another type of encryption is Windows 10 and Windows 11 come with a program called BitLocker in some versions of Windows. And it, too, will encrypt the hard drive so that nobody can read it without being able to log into Windows. Here's a comparison of those two products, and I really like VeraCrypt better. So VeraCrypt is created by Idrix, whereas BitLocker is created by Microsoft. VeraCrypt is available for just about any computer, not only Windows and any version of Windows, but also for Mac and Linux, whereas BitLocker is only available for Windows Pro or Windows Enterprise. VeraCrypt, you have to install the software, but it's free and it's easy to install. BitLocker, if you have Windows Pro or Windows Enterprise, it comes with BitLocker already installed. Transparency, VeraCrypt is open source, BitLocker is proprietary, so we have no idea how BitLocker actually works. The one advantage of BitLocker is if you work for a large company, BitLocker enables your IT department to manage the passwords and manage the encryption features, whereas VeraCrypt doesn't have anything like that. And in particular, if you encrypt somebody's hard drive and they leave the company and you now don't know the password for that laptop, with BitLocker, it has some features that would allow the corporation to recover the contents of that laptop, whereas VeraCrypt has no such thing. You just have to wipe the laptop and reinstall Windows, and you'd never get the data back that was on it. So for companies, especially large companies, BitLocker has some advantages, but for us individuals, I think VeraCrypt is much, much better. Okay, I want to talk about phones real quickly because encryption is an important thing on phones as well. So most of us keep so much data on our phones. If you think about it, if not for encryption, if we lose our phones, whoever finds the phone would be able to learn an awful lot of information about us. So it's really important that we have encryption on our phones as well, because phones get lost way more than PCs or laptops do. So all modern phones have what they call whole phone encryption, where if you have this turned on, the entire contents of your phone, your contacts, your documents, everything on your phone, your call history, everything on your phone is encrypted. However, keep in mind the encryption is only as good as your password. And for most of us, that's our PIN. So when I pick up my phone, for example, and I turn it on, it prompts me for a PIN. The shorter that PIN is, the better the chance that somebody will be able to guess it and be able to get at the data on your phone. So the recommendation I hear all the time now is use at least 6 digits for your PIN, or you just make it too easy for the bad guys to guess your PIN. An extra level of security is you can get apps that you can run on your phone that allow you to store data in an encrypted format. So one of the ones I really like, and it's free, is called ColorNote. And what it allows you to do is create these notes, and you can put any information you want in one of these notes. And if you want to, you can tell it to encrypt any of the notes on your phone. So here's a screenshot that was taken on my phone a long time ago. This is like 4 years old, but never mind. So you can see there's some notes called don't forget, business plan, reminders, contacts, shopping list, books, and just notes with different kinds of information I've created. But if you look next to business plan, you can see there's a little padlock next to it. And this tells you that I've put a password on that note. So to access that information, someone has to type the appropriate password. So it's another level of protection. So in order to get at that information, if somebody got my phone, they'd have to not only enter the PIN to unlock the phone, but they'd have to go into this app and they'd have to know the password for this particular note to be able to see it. So for really sensitive information, that's a good way to do it. Another really good app is Microsoft OneNote. OneNote is available for laptops, for PCs, and it also runs on Android and iOS. And just like ColorNote that I just showed you, OneNote enables you to create a note and then to put a password. Actually, you put a password on a whole section of notes, but you can put a password on a section so that in order to see any of the notes in that section, somebody has to know the password. I really love OneNote. I pretty much organize my life around OneNote, and to be able to have sections in OneNote that have passwords on them gives me a real warm and fuzzy feeling that nobody's going to be able to get at that information. So I really love OneNote. To wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about using good passwords, because all of this is based on using really good passwords. You can use really good programs like Veracrypt or AES-Crypt, and if you use really lousy passwords, it's not going to do you any good. Somebody will manage to guess it if they can get at your data. So these are the three password commandments in my view. Number one, keep track of your passwords using a password manager. There's lots of password managers out there. My favorite is called Bitwarden, and I use it to store all my passwords. And one of the things this enables me to do is to use different passwords everywhere. So every time I sign up for a new website, every time I create a new encrypted section in OneNote, anytime I create something new that needs a password, if I create an encrypted container, whatever, I'll store that password in Bitwarden so that I don't forget it. Because as we talked about, if you forget the password for any of these things, then that data is just useless to you. So use different passwords everywhere. The problem we run into is it used to be very common that people would use the same password on Facebook and on their banking account. And maybe Facebook, because it's not a real high security app, doesn't protect your password very well. And if somebody breaks into your Facebook account and discovers your password, now they've got your password for your bank as well, and now it's a serious security breach. So you really want to use a new password everywhere. And one of the things I like is what's called a password generator. We've all been in the situation, most of us have, I think, where we've gone to a new website and we've signed up for something and they want your email address and they want a password. And you're sitting there thinking, what should I use for a password? And you're just looking around the room and there's your cat Fuzzy sitting on the rug. And so you use Fuzzy123 as your password, which is really not a good password. So what a password generator is it enables you to just say, hey, I need a password, and it'll make up a password for you. So password managers are programs or websites where you can go and say, I need a password, and it'll just make one up for you. And there's lots of them that are free. Bitwarden's got one, and there's the web address for it. And if you go to that address, it'll just make up a password for you that you can use. Be sure you write it down someplace, put it in your password manager, write it in a notebook, whatever you do. Dashlane's got one, and there's the address for it. I really like it. But, okay, so I'm a software developer, and I use a password generator a lot, and so I do what any good software developer would do. I wrote my own, and you're welcome to use it if you want to. And let me show you what that looks like. So here's what my password generator looks like. And it's got lots of different options here, but you can see it just made up a password for me. Fear.past plus 02. Those are all randomly made up. And it just picked some random words, picked some special characters, made up a number, and you can see that it's got all the features that websites usually want. They want an uppercase letter, a lowercase letter, they want a special character, and they want some digits. And if you want something longer than that, I can say, no, this is an important website. I want it to be 18 characters long. So I click that button, and there's one that's 18 characters long. And if you don't like that one, you can keep clicking refresh here, and it'll just keep making up passwords for you. If you want something really secure, there's one that's 25 characters long. So you can make up passwords all day long. Maybe I don't need to put uppercase letters in it. I can turn that option off. And now I get a password that's all lowercase letters. And again, I can keep saying, give me more passwords, all I want. You can do lots of different what I call modes. So these are memorable passwords. So you could probably remember that if you had to, because it's made up of English words and then a special character and a number. But you could also do what I call an evil password. Click evil, and it's just a random jumble of letters, numbers, and special characters. So there's something you probably have a really hard time remembering, but if you put it in a password manager, it won't matter because the password manager will remember it for you. If I turn uppercase back on, now it's got uppercase letters mixed in with that. So lots of options here, and all the options are explained right here. So if you want to know what all those different things mean, you've got it there. Sometimes you just need to make up a random number. So I can click on number, and it just gives me a number as long as I want. So I find this really useful, and every time I get prompted to make up a password, I come here, and I got a nice random password. So hopefully you'll find that useful, or just use any of the password managers if you don't like that one. Okay, so where do you get all this software we've talked about? It's all right there. And again, I'll make sure Chris has a copy of these slides so you can try out any of the software that you want. Notice Veracrypt, the company Idris that makes it, is French, so it's veracrypt.fr. And that's a lot of people get tripped up by that. And that's all I've got. I know there's a lot there, but I hope you found something useful there. I'd be happy to take any questions you've got right now. And if you can't think of good questions right now, there's my email address. You're welcome to send me questions at any time in the future.
Wow, that was really, really good, Mark. I'm going to, I can't force unmute, but what I can do is mute all and allow people to unmute themselves, and I will include you as well, Mark. You'll have to unmute yourself again. But now people can open up their mics and ask questions. We do have some stuff in the chat that we can go through. Tom asks, what are the pros and cons of 7-Zip versus Veracrypt? Are you familiar with 7-Zip?
Yes. So I use 7-Zip a lot, so I didn't want to hit you with a lot of different programs that do similar things, but I highly recommend 7-Zip as an alternative. So what 7-Zip is really good at is if you want to take a bunch of files and put them in a container with a password on it that you know will be really secure, then 7-Zip is really good at doing that, as long as those files aren't changing. What Veracrypt allows you to do is to create a container that you can mount just like it's a drive, and then you can edit the files and you know, add files, delete files. So if you're going to be working on those files, then Veracrypt is a much better way to handle that. 7-Zip is really good if you wanted to take a bunch of files, put them in a 7-Zip file, and then email that to somebody and have them be able to get at it, you know, to open it up and get the original files back. 7-Zip would be really good for that. So Veracrypt, think of Veracrypt as what you would use if these are files you want to be able to work on an ongoing basis, whereas 7-Zip's really good for taking files that you're not going to change and being able to put them in some sort of container and store that container or send it to somebody or whatever.
I guess one of the benefits of 7-Zip would be as well that it does compression on the files. So if you are emailing things around, you're going to make things a little bit smaller that you're actually sending around.
Yes, that's a really good point. So 7-Zip does really good compression as well. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Alan brought up an interesting point. He says one problem with Veracrypt is that when the container is updated, the date and timestamp doesn't change. Then if you have a file synchronization backup system that is based on date and timestamps, the updated container won't be backed up. And he says the trick is to touch the container file using the Unix utility called Touch, which is also available for Windows. That updates the date time stamp, and he says you do a mount, then unmount, and then touch it. And that would update the date and time stamp so that any backup system you got will recognize that the file has actually changed.
Okay, Chris, I'm going to make Alan really happy here. So I'm going to share my screen real quick. Yeah. It's a quick one. So I glossed over this option because there's so many options in Veracrypt, but I'm going to create a new container. And I'm going to do just what I did before, accept most of the defaults. Notice this little checkbox here, never save history. That's not a very good description of what it does. If you uncheck that box, then as you use the Veracrypt container, it will update the time and date.
Oh, fantastic.
That's what you need right there, Alan. Just create the container, uncheck that box, and it will have the time and date of the last time that the files in the container were updated.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Mark. Okay. Tom asked, does Veracrypt compress? And somebody else answered in the chat that it does not do compression. It just does the encryption.
One thing to keep in mind is that just like any drive, you know, most people don't use it, but Windows has compression built in. When you have a drive, you can turn compression on that drive, and you can do the same thing with a Veracrypt drive. So you can actually get some compression. Now, it's not very good compression. 7-zip can do a much better job, but at least there is something there where you can turn compression on that container.
Great. Eldon asks, I don't know if anyone would want to, but can you put a container inside a container?
You can. And I have actually done that before. The PC that I used to do my demo on, the flash drive was actually entirely encrypted. And when I did this demo, I would create an encrypted container and gloss over the fact that I was actually creating a container within a container.
Interesting. Tom asks, how you seed your password generator?
Oh, it uses the JavaScript random number generator, and I provide it the current date and time as a seed, and that's what goes into the random number generator. And it does like 10,000 loops before it uses anything so that it gets mixed up a little bit.
Which is probably good enough for most people's use.
Yeah.
Glenn has a rather long one here. He says the FBI has issued a warning to Americans about sending regular text messages between Android and iPhones. And the agency revealed exchanges between the two brands leave messages vulnerable to hackers. And it goes on and so forth. They're advised to use secure encrypting messages. I guess this comes down to essentially the same thing that you're talking about with emails, that, a plain text message is not encrypted. And so if you want things to be secret, don't use something like email or text messages that will be unencrypted data.
Yeah, exactly. If I had a buddy that I frequently wanted to exchange encrypted text messages with, I'd use something like Signal or WhatsApp where you can encrypt the messages.
Okay. Serge Arik says he uses InfoManiac Swiss Transfer for sending encrypted files. Do you think this kind of online services as secure as is claimed?
You have to trust the company, but there are certainly lots of companies that do that and that are perfectly secure. So Proton is one of the ones I'm familiar with. I've used them on and off for a long time. So if it's a company that's got a good reputation and you can do web searches and discover that, then absolutely the technology exists to be completely secure.
Okay, great. I had one actually. You talked a little bit about BitLocker on Windows for Enterprise and Pro. Windows Home also includes device encryption. Do you have any experience with device encryption and how that differs from BitLocker itself or VeraCrypt for doing complete encryption?
Yeah, so I don't have any experience with it. My understanding is that it uses a crippled version of BitLocker, but the encryption is fine. It just doesn't have all the features that BitLocker has, but that's what they're using under the covers. But honestly, I've never used it because at work, if somebody wants their entire laptop encrypted, we use VeraCrypt. So I just don't have much experience with it.
Okay. I know that there are some manufacturers of computers that ship their machines with that device encryption turned on, and I do know that your keys for it are stored as part of your OneDrive, that your personal section on OneDrive so that they are backed up, but I don't have any experience beyond that as well, so... if anybody else has experience with or more information on device encryption, maybe we could have a discussion at one of our Q&A sessions or something like that. Tom mentions basically all phone systems are horribly insecure. I agree with that. And, okay, Stu just asked, do you have an opinion on using biometrics versus passwords or PINs?
Yeah, so... I think biometrics, the last I read about it, I think they're pretty good. You know, there's always the worry, if you were a spy, there's always the worry that somebody will forcibly force you to put your finger up against the, screen and unlock it. And I suppose that could happen to us mere mortals. So that's the only issue. Then that's one of the reasons I like using things like ColorNote and OneNote so that for my really sensitive data, I'm not just depending on a fingerprint or a PIN to protect the data.
Yeah, one of the other things that I've heard about biometrics that it's been said that, well, if your password is compromised, you can change your password. If your biometrics happen to be compromised, not so much. So that could be a concern. Alan asks, what about passkeys? Do you have any experience with passkeys?
Yeah, so my experience with passkeys is pretty new. Everything I've read says that they're very secure, and I don't have any reason to think that's not the case. I'm actually a little fuzzy on what's going on under the covers with passkeys, so I don't know that I'm in a real good position to guarantee that they're secure, but they're supposed to be better.
Yeah, I, like you, I don't have a lot of experience with passkeys. I've done some reading on it, but I think I have to do an awful lot more reading before I'm really comfortable. It's not so much from the security point of view, but what concerns me is the idea that it tends to be tied to a particular device. And if you lose that device, then do you lose access to that particular service? Like if you set up, say, your Gmail account to use passkeys and you don't have any other means other than the passkeys, well, if that passkey is tied to a particular device and the device gets corrupted or lost, do you lose access to your Gmail? And that would frighten me quite a bit.
Yeah, and so the solution to that everybody's come up with is, well, click here and we'll back up your passkeys. Well, now somebody's got my passkeys that I may not want them to have.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's the thing that worries me. So I don't understand if there's additional security to make that safe, but that worries me. Yeah.
I believe that some password managers will store passkeys. Also, because HTTPS is a pretty secure protocol, I believe that there was a American general who exchanged sex messages with his mistress, because he had a wife. And the way they exchanged messages is that they would save messages as a draft in one Gmail account, and then they would each log in and turn to the Gmail account to be able to see each other's messages.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, I know Bitwarden will store pass keys, but I haven't used that.
Yeah. It seems to be it is the up-and-coming thing for secure authentication. But, yeah, I'm still, very iffy about it. I want to make sure that, there's multiple ways that I have to get into my Gmail, for example. So I'm a firm believer in two-factor authentication, but I'm more in tune with having four factors of authentication. You have to use any two of them. So I always like to have some way of getting in if one method fails on me.
Well, with your Google account, you can actually have Google send you, I believe, a series of 10 different 12 or 14-digit numbers, each of which you can use to log in if all else fails. So you get that, you print it out, you delete it from your computer, and you have this piece of paper. It's similar, actually, in that way to BitLocker, in that you can print out your keys and put them in a safe place.
Yeah.
So paper is not totally outmoded yet.
Yeah.
No, and I actually do that. I have those are one-time passwords, so each of them can only be used a single time. And I actually store my list in my password manager. So as long as I have access to my password manager, which I can access from multiple devices, then I can get into those one-time passwords. But it's something that everybody really needs to think about when they're thinking about authentication, is that what happens if your second means of authentication fails on you. You don't want to lose access to your online accounts and things like that just because of failure of one device. So you have to really give some thought to that. I don't see any other questions. So if I missed anybody's question in going through them all, by all means, chime in again. If there's any other people that have any questions?
Chris, there is one question there from Jocelyn. How do you access the hidden container in VeraCrypt?
Oh, all right. So the way a hidden container works, and I'll just give you a brief overview. So what you do is you create a regular container, a regular VeraCrypt container, and you give it a password. And then typically you put some files in it that are not real sensitive, but somebody could understand why you would not want everybody to see it. So maybe you put your tax returns in it. And then what you do is you go back and you create a hidden container inside that main container, and you use a different password. And when you go to mount the container, if you give it the first password that you used, you'll just see your tax returns. But if you give it that other container, that other password, it understands that there's another container hidden inside of it that contains the plans for the revolution, or, you know, whatever, you know, your super secret business plans or whatever, and you'll actually see those files.
That's cool.
And that's the idea, is that if you're coming through customs, leaving a country that maybe doesn't appreciate freedoms the way we do, that they might say, hey, we're looking on your laptop and we can see that you've got VeraCrypt installed and there's this great big file and we're suspecting that that's a VeraCrypt container. We want to see what's in it and we're not letting you go until you show it to us. And you say, okay, I'll show it to you. And you put in the password for the overall container and they're going to see your tax returns and say, oh, okay, and they'll let you go. Where they don't realize that if you put in a different password, they'd see the plans for the rebels or whatever. And so that's the idea behind hidden containers.
That is very cool. I like that.
Is that available on Android?
I don't think so. I don't think anything in VeraCrypt's available on Android.
Natalie has a question. I'm not sure I understand it. If you encrypt a file, if you save as, will the doc keep the encryption and password?
That's a really good question, and I don't know. Try it and find out.
Oh, I see. You save it as a new file name. Yes, okay. Yeah. I suspect it would be because it is part of the info on the file itself as opposed. So you're dealing with that encrypted file. But, yeah, it probably would be worth trying just to see.
Yeah, I did that with the membership file because I would do save as November, December, whatever, and it still asks me for the code when I
okay,
go
good.
Oh, good. Okay.
Good to know. Thanks Linda. Yeah, interesting. Any other questions before we call it a wrap? Okay, I don't see anything else coming through. Last call for anybody if they want to unmute themselves or dump something into the chat. And as we wrap up, I would like to thank Mark very much for giving a very interesting presentation. I think that this demystifies an awful lot of things about encryption and simplifies them to the point where people can understand that, hey, I can do that and keep their information secure. So much, much appreciated for a very clear presentation with links to a whole bunch of free software. Actually, I just as you were going through it, I looked at the AES Crypt website, and they have a big buy button. They don't seem to have an indication that it's free. Now, I may be wrong because they do have the source code repository. So if they're giving away the source code, then presumably anybody could compile it.
That I will go check that, and I'll tell you what. When I mail you the slides, I will let you know.
Okay, thanks.
You know, this would not be the first time that's happened where somebody switched from free model to okay, now I'm popular enough that I can start charging, and I didn't know about it, so I'll check on that.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Yeah, so thanks very kindly, Mark. Anytime you want to come and talk to us about any other topic, I'm sure it would be well received. I know you're part of the Speakers Bureau at the APCUG. And so if there's some other topics you'd like to enlighten us on, I'm sure everybody would welcome it. So thanks very much. And just as we wrap up, just a reminder that next week's Q&A session is going to be both in person as well as on Zoom. And so if anybody wants to join us in person, it will be at the North Gloucester branch of the Ottawa Public Library on Ogilvie Road. A message went out today to the announcement list with links to Google Maps for both the library as well as the after meeting WingSig at the Big Rig Kitchen and Brewery in the Gloucester Center. And keep in mind that the time for that presentation or that meeting is going to be changed from 7:30 to 8:30 to 7 till 8 p.m. instead because of the closure of the library at 8:30. We have to be out by 8:15. With that, thanks very much. And as soon as we get the presentation file from Mark, we will get it posted onto our website. So you'll be able to access it there along with the audio track and the contents of the chat window. We'll all go up there within a couple of days. So thanks very much, folks. Hope to see you all next week.